Welcome back, everybody, for another deep dive with us. This time, we're going to get into something that's always fascinating to me. It can be a little dense sometimes, but I think it's going to be really exciting to kind of unpack together. We're talking about biblical genealogy, specifically in Genesis,
okay,
and what they might actually tell us about chronology.
Right.
We've got some really interesting excerpts to look at today.
Yeah.
From guys like William Henry Green, B.B. Warfield, and then also some archaeological findings that I think are going to be pretty fascinating to look at alongside this. So, are you ready to jump in?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is one of those things that I think it's always good to come back to and kind of revisit, because we can make assumptions about what these genealogies are doing. And I think if we take a fresh look at them, we can see some interesting stuff.
Yeah. And it's easy to look at these and be like, oh, yeah, this is the timeline. This is, you know, you add up the years and this is exactly, you know, when creation happened or when the flood happened. But it's like, what if that's not the whole picture?
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And there are definitely clues that that's not the whole picture.
Hmm?
One of the examples that always kind of jumps out to me is Shem.
Okay.
Hmm? Noah's son.
Right.
If you add up the ages in Genesis 11, he's still alive during Abraham's time.
Yeah, it's crazy, like hundreds of years later. It's wild to think that Noah and his sons could have lived for so long after this cataclysmic event, you know,
yeah,
that reshaped the world. Wouldn't that have profoundly shaped early human history? Like, if those guys were still around.
Right. You would think that that would have some pretty major ripple effects.
Yeah.
And you would think that the Bible would at least hint at it somewhere.
Yeah, it's interesting that it doesn't.
Right, that silence, I think, is telling. Like, maybe we're not supposed to read this like a year-by-year account of history.
Okay.
It's kind of trying to fit a square peg in a round hole if we try to force it into that kind of framework.
Okay, so maybe there's some wiggle room in the timeline. But then, you know, archaeology comes along and throws another wrench in things, right?
Yeah.
So, like, around 2000 BC, which would be roughly, you know, 290 years before Abraham is supposed to have been born.
Right.
There's no evidence in Mesopotamia of a massive flood wiping out civilization.
Yeah, you think that something like that, we would find some evidence of a disruption at least.
Right. Yeah, it's not just Mesopotamia either.
Right.
Think about Egyptian civilization, which we can trace back even further. There are no signs of a flood interruption there either.
Yeah.
Which really, I mean, that creates a real puzzle when you consider that by 3000 BC, both Egypt and Mesopotamia were already pretty advanced civilizations.
Right, yeah. If you think about where civilization was in 3000 BC, if you try to squeeze the flood and the Tower of Babel into the period before that, the timeline starts to get, well, a bit cramped.
Yeah.
If you want to try to hold on to that traditional understanding.
Totally. Especially when you start getting into, you know, like Jericho.
Right.
And like findings like that, that show like continuous habitation dating back to 8000 BC.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we're talking about a very ancient timeline here. And so that all just suggests that maybe we need to reconsider some assumptions we have.
Yeah. So, I mean, this begs the question then, does this mean the Bible got it wrong?
Well,
is there like a conflict between what the Bible says and what we're seeing in science and historical findings?
That's a good question. And I think a question a lot of people have, but not necessarily. It's important to remember that the Bible isn't trying to be a science textbook.
Okay.
And so the absence of specific chronological data in Genesis doesn't automatically create a contradiction.
Yeah.
It just means we need to be careful about imposing a modern scientific framework onto ancient texts.
Okay. So how should we approach his genealogies then?
Yeah.
If not as a strict timeline, like what were the writers trying to convey?
Well, I think one thing that scholars like Warfield and Green would say is that these genealogies are primarily about lineage and ancestry. They're tracing the line of descent from Adam to Noah, from Noah to Abraham, highlighting the key figures in God's unfolding plan.
So it's less about when things happened and more about WHO was involved.
Right.
Kind of like a family history, you know, that focuses on the key players and
exactly
their relationships to each other.
Exactly. And remember, in ancient cultures, your lineage was everything. It determined your identity, your inheritance, your place in the community.
Right.
And so these genealogies were a way of connecting people to their past, to their heritage, to the grand narrative of God's interaction with humanity.
It's kind of like those epic family sagas that we see in like movies or books, you know,
saying.
The focus is on the characters and how they're connected.
And just like those sagas, there's often a deeper meaning woven into the story. These genealogies aren't just dry lists of names and ages. They're telling us something about God's faithfulness, his covenant promises, his plan for redemption.
Okay, so instead of getting bogged down in trying to nail down like a precise timeline, maybe we should be reading these genealogies more like a good story, paying attention to the characters and the themes, the overall message.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to approach it.
Okay.
When we shift our perspective like that, I think we might find these genealogies have a lot more to offer than just a chronological framework. They become windows into the heart of God's relationship with humanity.
Wow. That's beautiful. That makes me wonder if we let go of our need to fit everything into this like neat little timeline, what other hidden treasures might we discover in these ancient texts?
Yeah, I think that's the exciting part, right?
Yeah.
There's always more to uncover when we approach the Bible with an open mind and a willingness to listen to what it's really saying. And speaking of listening, there's another passage in Genesis that I think sheds even more light on this whole genealogy versus chronology debate.
Oh, I think I know where you're going with this. You're talking about Genesis 10, the Table of Nations, the one that kind of seems to jump around in time.
Exactly. We touched on it earlier, but it's worth revisiting because it really highlights the non-chronological nature of these genealogical accounts. Remember, Genesis 10 is placed before the Tower of Babel story, but it describes nations and languages that wouldn't have existed until after Babel.
Wait, so it's like the Bible is giving us a glimpse of the future, then rewinding to show us how we got there.
It does seem that way, doesn't it? And if we try to force this into a strict timeline, we run into all sorts of problems. For example, the Elamites and Assyrians were already established peoples long before 2000 BC, which puts them way outside the time frame allowed by a strict reading of Genesis 11.
So is this a mistake? A contradiction? Did the writer just get things mixed up?
Not necessarily. It's more helpful to see it as a literary technique. Remember, the Bible is not a modern history textbook. It uses different genres, different literary styles to convey its message.
So maybe the Table of Nations is more about showing the spread of humanity across the earth, the diversity of cultures and languages, than about giving us a precise timeline of when each nation emerged.
That's a great way to put it.
Okay.
Yeah. It's about painting this picture of God's plan for humanity unfolding across the globe, despite the disruption caused by the Tower of Babel event.
It's like one of those maps you see in fantasy novels.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that show like all the different kingdoms and territories.
Right.
Even though the story might not take place in all of those locations.
Yeah.
It's about world building.
Yeah.
About creating a sense of scope and scale.
I love that analogy. It really helps us understand how Genesis 10 fits into the larger narrative. It's not just this random list of names and places.
Yeah.
It's showing us the big picture, the grand sweep of God's plan for all nations.
So connecting this to the bigger picture then, maybe the takeaway here isn't to get hung up on trying to reconcile every detail with a strict timeline. Maybe it's about, stepping back and appreciating the larger themes, the theological truths
right.
that these genealogies are trying to convey.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. These texts are inviting us to engage with them on a deeper level.
Yeah.
To look beyond those surface details and discover the richness of meaning that lies beneath. And that's what makes studying the Bible so fascinating. There's always more to uncover, more to learn, more to ponder.
It's like one of those Where's Waldo pictures.
Yes.
The longer you look, the more you discover. And speaking of hidden details, there's one more thing about these genealogies we haven't touched on yet.
Okay.
And this is pretty big, I think. The Bible itself never actually totals up the years in these genealogies.
Oh.
It gives us lifespans. It gives us ages when people had children. But never a grand total from creation to Abraham or from the flood to a specific point in history, which is, I mean, if these genealogies were meant to be like this precise chronological tool, wouldn't it make sense to include that final number?
Yeah, it'd be like leaving out the answer to a math problem.
Exactly. Especially when we compare it to how numbers are used elsewhere in the Bible.
Right.
Think about those detailed censuses we talked about, where every tribe is counted and then a grand total is given for the entire Israelite population. Clearly, in those cases, getting an exact count was super important.
Right. And that contrast highlights the different purposes behind these different uses of numbers.
Yeah.
The censuses were about accounting for people, resources, military strength. But the genealogies, they seem to have a different agenda.
So maybe the absence of a grand total in the Genesis genealogies is a deliberate choice, like a way of saying, hey, focus on the connections, the lineage, the unfolding story, not on trying to calculate the exact date of creation.
That's a brilliant insight.
Oh, thanks.
And it brings us back to the idea that these genealogies are primarily about lineage, ancestry, and the unfolding of God's plan through specific individuals and families. The focus is on the who, not just the when.
It's like looking through a family photo album that has names and relationships written under each picture, but no specific dates. You might not know exactly when each photo was taken.
Right.
But you still get a sense of the family's history, the connections between the generations, you know, the stories that each picture represents.
That's a perfect analogy. It really captures the essence of what these genealogies are all about. They're not just about dates and timelines. They're about telling the story of God's family, his people, his ongoing relationship with humanity.
So to sum things up then, I think we've uncovered a whole new way of looking at these ancient texts. Genesis genealogies are these fascinating windows into lineage and ancestry, but they're not meant to be taken as rigid timelines. They're part of a larger narrative that invites us to explore these deeper truths about God, humanity, and the unfolding of his plan throughout history.
Beautifully said. And it leaves us with a really thought-provoking question. If the Bible isn't giving us these specific dates for creation or the flood, what does that tell us about its focus and its purpose? What other kinds of truth might we find within these ancient stories?
That's a great question to ponder. And for those of you who are fired up and want to dive deeper into this topic, we highly recommend checking out the writings of scholars like Warfield and Green. Their work is a treasure trove of insights, and I think it challenges us to approach these ancient texts with both humility and curiosity.
Yeah, remember, there's always more to learn and discover when we approach the Bible with an open mind and a willingness to wrestle with its complexities. The journey of faith is not about having all the answers, but about seeking truth with a humble heart and an inquiring spirit.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.
Absolutely.
We hope it sparked your curiosity and inspired you to continue exploring the fascinating world of biblical genealogies.
Until next time, keep seeking, keep questioning, keep discovering the wonders of God's word.
Yeah, it's amazing to think that just kind of one little shift in perspective can unlock a whole new understanding of these ancient texts. It's like we've almost been conditioned to view the Bible through this very modern lens with this like obsession with timelines and, you know, getting the dates exactly right.
It's true. I mean, we live in a world where we can, you know, track time down to the millisecond, you know.
Yeah.
But for the ancient Israelites, time was experienced in a very different way. It was measured in a very different way.
Yeah. So if we're not supposed to get all bogged down and trying to figure out like exactly when everything happened, what are these genealogies telling us? Like, what's the big picture here?
Well, one of the things that becomes really clear when you step back and look at the genealogies as a whole is that they're very selective. I mean, they're not trying to give us a complete family tree,
right,
for every single person who ever lived. They're highlighting specific individuals, specific lines of descent.
Yeah, that's a great point. It's like those family trees that people do, you know, where they're like tracing back to a certain, you know, branch of the family,
exactly.
Maybe to like a famous ancestor or like a key figure in their family history.
Right. And that selectivity is a clue that these genealogies are trying to communicate something very specific. It's not just about recording facts. It's about shaping our understanding of history.
Okay.
About highlighting the people and events that are most important for understanding God's plan.
Okay, so it's like a curated history.
Yeah.
Kind of focusing on the key players and the...
It is.
Major plot points.
It is. And the question then becomes, well, who gets to decide who is important enough to be included?
Right.
And what criteria they're using. And that's where it gets really fascinating, because when you look closely at the genealogies, you can start to see these patterns emerge. For example, the genealogy in Genesis 5, which traces the line from Adam to Noah, it seems particularly interested in highlighting people who lived long lives and who had a close relationship with God.
Like Enoch,
who
walked with God and was taken up to heaven without dying.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then you have figures like Methuselah, who lived to be 969 years old.
Yeah.
These were people who, in the eyes of the ancient Israelites, embodied righteousness and longevity.
Wow.
They were seen as these models of faith, faithfulness.
Makes you wonder if those long lifespans were meant to be taken literally or if they were symbolic, right?
Right, right.
Representing something about the character or the importance of those individuals.
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's a question scholars have been debating for centuries. But regardless of whether we interpret those ages literally or figuratively, the point is that they're meant to convey something.
Okay.
About the special status of those individuals.
In God's plan.
So these genealogies are less about like historical precision and more about painting a picture of God.
Right.
Working through specific people and families throughout history.
Precisely.
Okay.
And this idea of selective inclusion also applies to the genealogy of Jesus in Matthew's gospel. I mean, it's not a complete exhaustive list.
Right.
Of all of Jesus's ancestors. It's a very carefully crafted narrative designed to highlight specific themes and connections.
Oh, right. You mentioned earlier that the genealogy of Jesus is schematic.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
So think of it like a family tree where some of the branches have been pruned, you know, to highlight those specific connections. For example, Matthew's genealogy includes women like Tamar, Rahab, and Ruth, who are not typically included in Jewish genealogies.
Because they are Gentiles.
Mm.
Or because their stories involve some, shall we say, scandalous elements. Exactly. Their inclusion is a deliberate choice, and it tells us something really important about Jesus' lineage and his mission. Matthew is showing us that Jesus is descended from this very diverse line of people.
Wow.
Including those who are considered outsiders or even sinners. And this foreshadows this idea that Jesus came to save all people.
Okay.
Not just the righteous or the elite.
So it's not just about who's in and who's out. It's about the message.
Right.
That's being conveyed.
Right, exactly.
By the specific people that are included.
Exactly. And this brings us back to this idea that these genealogies are more like these carefully constructed narratives than simple lists of names and dates. They're telling a story about God's faithfulness, his covenant promises, his plan for redemption.
It's like the writer is saying, pay attention to these people, to these connections. There's something important here that you need to see.
Precisely. And I think that's one of the most exciting things about studying the Bible, is that realization that there's always more to discover, more to uncover, the more deeply we engage with these texts.
It's like those optical illusions where you see one image at first.
Yes.
But then you look closer and suddenly a whole new image emerges.
Yes.
You know, and you realize there was more to the picture than you initially thought.
I love that. And that's what we're doing here with these genealogies. We're challenging our assumptions. We're looking beyond the surface.
Yeah.
And we're discovering those deeper layers of meaning that are woven into these ancient texts.
This has been mind-blowing, honestly.
It is.
We've gone from viewing genealogies as simple timelines to seeing them as these like carefully crafted narratives that are like they're revealing God's plan and purpose for humanity. It's like we've unlocked a secret code or something.
It is a bit like cracking a code, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's what makes studying the Bible so rewarding. The more we dig, the more we discover, the richer our understanding becomes.
And this is just the tip of the iceberg, right?
Right.
There's so much more to explore within the Bible itself.
Absolutely. And as we continue to kind of dive deeper into these texts, it's important to remember that we're not just learning about history. We're encountering the living God. We're engaging with his story, his plan, his heart for humanity.
So it's not just an intellectual exercise. It's a spiritual journey.
It is. And that journey is filled with wonder and discovery and the joy of encountering the God who created us and loves us beyond measure.
It really is incredible to think that something as simple as like a list of names and ages can hold so much depth and meaning, you know?
It is. And it really makes you realize how much we miss when we just kind of skim the surface of these texts. Like there's a whole world of meaning waiting to be discovered if we're willing to just slow down, pay attention, and ask the right questions.
Yeah, and speaking of asking the right questions, there's one more kind of fascinating detail about these Genesis genealogies that I don't think we've touched on yet. You know how like some people have tried to use these genealogies to calculate like the age of the earth?
Ah, yes, those attempts to create a biblical chronology and pinpoint the exact year of creation. It's an intriguing idea, but as we've seen, it runs into some problems when we consider the nature of these genealogies.
Yeah, and I think one of the biggest problems is that the Bible itself never gives us a total number of years for these genealogies. We have individual lifespans, we have ages when people had children, but no grand total from Adam to Abraham or from the flood to any specific point in history.
That's a crucial point. if these genealogies were meant to be used as this precise chronological tool, wouldn't it make sense for the writer to give us that final sum?
Yeah, it'd be like leaving out the answer to a math problem.
Exactly.
Especially when we compare it to other places in the Bible where numbers are used. Like, think about those detailed censuses we talked about, where every tribe is counted and then a grand total is given for the entire Israelite population. Clearly, in those cases, getting an exact count was important.
Right. And that contrast highlights the different purposes behind these different uses of numbers.
Yeah.
Right. The censuses were about accounting for people, resources, military strength. But the genealogies seem to have a different agenda.
So maybe the absence of a grand total in the Genesis genealogies is a deliberate choice, like a way of saying, hey, focus on the connections, the lineage, the unfolding story, not on trying to calculate the exact date of creation.
That's a really insightful observation. It's like the writer is inviting us to kind of step back from our modern obsession with these precise timelines and embrace a more ancient way of understanding time and history.
A way that's more focused on the who than the when.
Exactly. A way that prioritizes relationships, connections, the grand narrative of God's interaction with humanity over this strict chronological sequence of events.
Yeah, this has been such an eye-opening conversation. We've gone from viewing Genesis genealogies as these simple, albeit confusing, timelines to seeing them as these carefully crafted narratives that are filled with like symbolic meaning and theological depth.
It's been a fascinating journey, hasn't it? And it really underscores the importance of approaching the Bible with humility and curiosity and a willingness to let go of our preconceived notions.
Because there's always more to discover, more to learn, more to wonder at.
Precisely. And that's what makes studying the Bible such a rich and rewarding experience. It's a lifelong journey of exploration, discovery, and encounter with the living God.
Well said. Well, for our listeners who are now like fired up and want to explore this topic further, where would you recommend they start?
There are so many great resources out there. For anyone interested in diving deeper into the scholarly side of things, I'd highly recommend checking out the writings of William Henry Green and B.B. Warfield. Their work is both insightful and challenging.
Great suggestions. And for those who just want to kind of explore the Genesis genealogies on their own, remember, it's not about memorizing names and dates. It's about looking for the patterns, the connections, the stories that these genealogies are trying to tell.
And don't be afraid to ask questions. Why are certain people included? What's significant about their lifespans? How do these genealogies connect to the larger narrative of the Bible?
Asking those kinds of questions, I think, can open up a whole new world of understanding and appreciation for these ancient texts.
Absolutely. So keep exploring, keep questioning, keep discovering the wonders of God's Word.
Well, thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. It's been a pleasure exploring the fascinating world of biblical genealogies with you.
The pleasure was all mine. Until next time, may your journey of faith be filled with wonder and discovery.